welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, April 29th, 2017, officially day 100 of the Trump quagmire, and we've got a couple things to say about it, believe it or not. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
On this snowy spring day here in Denver, I guess it's not that uncommon because I was listening to our Ted Cruz soup fetish episode.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't know if it was a year or 2 years ago now. I guess it was a year ago now.
Yeah.
And that was in late April, and we were hiding from a snowstorm.
Yeah.
Because it had been like
crazy.
Yeah, it had been like 70 to 80 degrees most days, like throughout February and March.
Yeah.
And now here at the end of April.
Almost May.
Now it's gross and snowing and cold and
yeah.
All the things.
It's gross.
And appropriately, it's Climate Change Awareness Day.
Yes, there's a march going on.
There's a march going on in the snow in Denver. That's one thing I'm noticing, that like whenever there's a thing going on in terms of something to march about or meet, like every time it's either we're there or we're turning on MSNBC and like there it is in the corner, Denver March for Something.
Yep.
We are very, very active and involved here. And
I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
There's only been one weekend so far since inauguration that Denver hasn't had a march of some kind.
Yeah, and they're usually pretty well attended.
Yep.
Like, it's not just like the 20 Trump people for whatever fake Trump rally. Like,
right.
100 days thing today. He's going to have a big rally in Pennsylvania or something.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So
yeah, I'm proud of us.
Yeah, yeah. We should do more local reaching out because there's a lot of other people here kind of doing the same things we're doing, and we're kind of in our own bubble.
Kind of busy.
Yeah, we're kind of busy. They're kind of busy, but we're all working for the same thing, so
yeah,
that's good to know.
And we're a pretty blue city.
Oh, very.
Like very,
very
blue city.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, you have to get way out into the burbs to get not way out, but into the burbs really to get the
purple, and then
the purple and
you
red.
You go to Colorado Springs or anywhere rural, and it's red.
But yeah,
yeah. Anyway, so I'm proud of Denver. I think it's great. Keep it up.
Yeah. Well. Should we just jump into the 100 days thing?
Yeah.
I've got something to say about it, and this should kick off some good conversation here, because I what's interesting to me is there's these polls in the field that they keep doing, and it's like Trump supporters are sticking by their man.
Yep.
And I think that's very, very telling, and the media is not able to connect the dots with this, because let's back up and think about this for a minute, right? So within the first 100 days, you have a guy who has promised to drain the swamp, and he's filled his cabinet with all these Wall Street types.
Yep.
He has offered a healthcare plan that basically guts all the things that people like about Obamacare and rolls back entitlements like Medicare and Medicaid, which he promised he wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else has been feckless and toothless and hasn't worked. He's not going to be able to get his tax thing through.
The Muslim ban got struck down twice.
Yeah, yeah. So he's been completely...
DOJ saying that they're going to strip federal funding from sanctuary cities, of which Denver is one.
Right.
Just got blocked by a federal court. He has not done anything. The wall's not going to get built. Obviously, Mexico's not going to pay for it.
Right. Well, let's talk about what he has done. And it's not necessarily concrete, although there's a couple concrete things we can talk about, and it's all related. He has made the climate more hostile for immigrants and refugees.
Yes.
and minorities.
Yes.
And he has sort of given ICE and the Border Patrol free rein to sort of be stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm. And they are absolutely rounding people up and deporting them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, overall, he's just had this very bellicose, nasty, official stance of the U.S. government and the White House towards immigrants especially, which is that in itself is absolutely a 180 from the Obama administration, even the Bush administration.
Yes.
And guess what, media? That's why he's not losing support from his people, because that's all they ever really gave a crap about.
Yes.
You can take all your economic anxiety and your anti-free trade, this and that, and what the Paul Ryan people think, that these people have a love for getting rid of entitlements and smaller government, which is the exact opposite, which is what Trump is trying to do anyway. And at the end of the day, they really don't care, because all they really cared about, the root of everything, if there is economic anxiety, the root of all that was based in fear and hatred of non-white people.
Correct. And women.
And yeah, and women.
But especially non-white people.
Yes.
And especially like outsiders or people that, I mean, it is racism, but it also is xenophobia.
Yeah.
For sure. But you're absolutely right. That's all they ever gave a shit about.
No, no. And guess what? At least in spirit, he has kept that promise, hasn't he?
Yes. He has. I mean, that's the only... He's done exactly what he said he's going to do. And then he can look to the federal government and say, oh, these courts, they, you know, they're overreaching and they're this and they're that. And he can blame it on somebody else that it's getting blocked. But he's doing what he said he was going to do.
Yes.
He's still saying, fuck those brown people.
Yeah.
We're not having it. And so among average people, his approval rating is at 42%. Among his supporters, it's at 94%.
Sure.
So, yeah.
That makes sense. Like he obviously hasn't won over Democrats, and he has lost the independents that he had for some reason. And so that's where we're at. And it's probably just going to get worse because now sort of the cracks in the facade of the economy, which he's going to exacerbate, are starting to show up a little bit.
Yeah.
And we are going to be in a very expensive war sooner or later.
Yes.
With somebody.
Yes.
Could be Korea, could be Nicaragua.
Yep.
Could be
Syria.
Yeah, we could get into a quagmire in Syria with the 800 disparate interests and forces. Like, you know, your average American couldn't even tell you who we'd be fighting
right.
if we ended up in Syria. Trump couldn't either. So here we are, guys. 100 days in, and the one promise kept is basically racism.
Yep.
And his supporters aren't wavering. So what does that tell you? Well, what the Chris Arnauds don't want to look at, or the New York Times, or these people don't want to admit when they write these puff pieces about how Trump hasn't lost his support, is why. And it's pretty simple when you look at the fact that he hasn't kept any of his promises, and he's accomplished virtually nothing except creating a more hostile climate for immigrants and refugees and brown people.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think we've been saying it since the primary. This is it. This is why this is he's the most racist, outwardly racist presidential candidate and president since, I mean, maybe not since, you know, forever, but in modern times.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people found that refreshing.
Yes.
It's like, that's what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear that all the problems in this country and all my problems, maybe personally or financially,
mm-hmm.
have to do with brown people.
Yes. Yep.
I'm so glad somebody finally said it.
Yes, exactly. And the media is hand-wringing and walking in circles and talking in circles, trying to say
finding
anything except
that. Finding the
both
sides angle that they can possibly find.
Yes.
And they don't want to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Or very few do.
Yeah.
And they don't want to say it because it's sort of like, it's unthinkable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that...
You can't admit it because it's too dark.
No.
It's too gross and we're not that country and
right.
we had a black guy already
yeah.
and we can't be that people.
No, we can't be that.
It has to be something else. There has to be some other explanation.
It's got to be economic anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be the Rust Belt, which has been in decline for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden now, well, all the people in the Rust Belt just got sick of establishment politics leaving them behind. That may be partially true, but then you don't look at who they blame.
Right.
Or who the conservative movement, the Republican Party, has capitalized on creating a scapegoat about.
Yes.
And
yes.
Trump figured it out.
Yep.
And, or, I mean, I'm sure others have figured it out, but he was the one that was ballsy enough to just go there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, Ted Cruz is like, I can't go there, you know. Rubio can't go there.
Romney can't go there.
Romney, Huckabee can't really go there. He just had to go there against the gays.
Yeah. Everybody can shit on the gays in the conservative movement.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
Republican
yeah.
Party.
Ironically, except matter. Trump, which shows you another thing, right? Like, I was waiting for that. And yes, Trump did kiss up to all these obnoxious right-wingers like Falwell and everybody, but he didn't make the gross anti-LGBT comments like the way Huckabee did.
No,
or
but
Cruz.
He just rolled back federal protections for LGBT workers in the federal government.
Oh, sure, sure.
So he's
taking action that hurts the LGBT community.
But my point was he didn't make that a centerpiece of his campaign the way a Huckabee or a Cruz or these Santorum. People would, or Santorum yep. would have, right? Yes. So what that tells me is even the religious sketch geese who are so crazy, it's like the fear of other, the fear of racial difference
yep.
is just so incredibly powerful.
Yes.
And like people just like even don't the want spooky to out it.
Gays who are going to go to hell, like it's not quite enough, but
not really.
Shit on brown people. Yeah. Yes. I'm all about it. They all about not. It.
And love of course it. There's a ton of crossover there with those same type
absolutely.
Of people. But,
absolutely.
You know, this is what you get. And,
because think Trump is not a religious conservative. He's never been one. He's not still. He doesn't. That's not his game. That's not his deal. He'll pretend to be a Christian because that's what he has to do to win.
Sure, sure.
But he's not a religious conservative. He's not. He doesn't really want to take away my birth control or rip the IUD out of my body. I don't think he gives a shit if I have an abortion or Planned Parenthood stays funded. I don't think he cares if I sleep with women or right. if I want to marry one. I don't think he gives a shit about any of that. But, he's like, whatever, it's fine.
Here's the thing, right? Those religious conservatives don't care that much about that stuff in terms of, well, he's hating on the brown people.
Right.
So now it shows what their priorities are.
But there is an entire wing of religious conservatives who do believe all of that.
No, absolutely.
The racial resentment and the racial anxiety, I understand what you're saying, does appear to be, even for them, somewhat stronger. And maybe they just said, well, first of all, Mike Pence helped them.
Yeah, that covered that flank a little bit. But my point is this, right? Ted Cruz thought exactly what you thought. Said this guy who's been, you know, whose wife was naked for magazines and who's been on Howard Stern talking about sex and all the things, and he's soft on LGBT. Like, I have an angle here.
Yeah.
I can rip all the evangelicals away. And they said, no. We want the guy who's talking about Mexico's the rapists.
Yeah.
Cruz isn't doing that.
To be fair, a lot of evangelicals voted for Cruz. A lot of them.
Sure, like, but I think
probably
it was like
the overwhelming majority of religious conservative evangelical voters voted for him.
I don't think so. I think if you go back and look at the primary results.
Well, who
voted
for him then?
Everybody.
No, who voted for Cruz? He almost won.
He didn't almost
win. Shitloads of people voted for him.
Shitloads of people, but he didn't almost win.
Well, so what I'm saying is those people who voted for Cruz are that religious conservative minority of the party, I think. They do care about that stuff, and they did vote for Cruz for that stuff. It's just not the overwhelming majority of people who voted, because those people care more, but have more of that racial resentment. But there is no world in which these people, these religious conservatives, don't want to destroy people like me.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're right. But I'm just saying that the number one motivator. Was racial resentment. Period,
I agree.
I guess. And
agreed.
And now we've
we've
made that point. We've beaten that to death. So, yeah. So moving on from there, is there anything else we could say about the 100 days? I mean, I guess we can tie that into what just happened this past week. Yet again, there was another push for an Obamacare repeal and replaced with Trump Care.
Yep.
And everybody got very excited in the Beltway because, ooh, they got the Freedom Caucus on board.
Yeah.
Because they ripped away more of the crap that. More people of the stuff like. That people actually like about mm-hmm. Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Like, states can now don't have to be beholden to any mandatory coverage pieces, whatever they call that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And pre-existing conditions basically went out the window. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to do this high-risk pool thing, which never works because it's never funded properly.
Right.
So all this crap that makes the insurance basically useless and it's tied in with big tax cuts for the rich. The Freedom Caucus said, oh, okay, we can get behind that. And then there was if they're behind it, then the moderates might fall in the line just to give Trump a win. And then Mitch McConnell could strong arm the Senate and it might actually pass. No. It's got 17% approval. And moderate or not, every Republican, no matter how gerrymandered their district is, pretty much is going home and just getting lambasted for wanting to do this.
Yes.
So I don't see how it ever passes.
Maybe
it does and they jump on that grenade for Trump, but
why? They care more about getting themselves reelected than they care about
the success of President Trump.
Well, maybe the calculus is that if we don't fulfill this promise, that's worse than passing an awful, horrible health care bill hates. No, well,
I think
you're right. And I think enough of them realize that. And that's why this crap is never going to pass.
People will forgive you for not keeping your promise. They will not forgive you for ripping away their health care and their child, mother, husband, daughter, friend, neighbor, boss dying because they did not have proper health insurance. That's the shit people don't forgive you
for. Right. And the theory was that, well, maybe they'll just pass something that's really watered down and is basically really Obamacare light and slap their name on it and say, we did it. But the Freedom Caucus isn't going for that.
No, they're not
going
to do it. Nope.
So how does anything get passed?
I don't know. They don't have, this is the whole thing that's so funny is, and we've known this forever, but they're starting to, the media is starting to talk about it and they're starting to get a little red faced because they've been trying to repeal Obamacare since it started. Repeal. We hate it.
They've been running on it.
You've had 7 years to come up with an alternative plan. 7 years. So go ahead and govern. What's your plan? Oh, fuck, we don't have one. We literally just, we just wanted to run on a hate Obama.
Yes.
Again, he's a brown guy.
No, and it worked. And it worked great for them. It worked great for fundraising.
Yep.
It worked great for primaries.
Yep.
It worked great for everything they needed to do.
But now that they have all the power.
And they could have kept running on it.
Yeah.
If Hillary was president, they would keep running on it. It would be, they'd just run it forever. It would be golden. It would be great.
But if they actually have to govern, they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
They're screwed.
They have no clue.
Well, and then when they have to govern, people also start to realize, right? Mm-hmm. Our conservative parents and relatives they actually are like, oh, okay, well, now it might actually be repealed. Oh.
Wait, what does that mean?
Oh.
Yeah. Hold on. Wait, whoa. What now?
Oh, and they're tying it to my Medicare benefits. And, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, wait.
My kid is still covered on my plan. Oh, no, they won't be?
No, they won't. Okay, what are they going to do?
What about my wife's cancer treatment? You know, about my Uncle Bob was out of work and he had to get on the exchange.
Medicare
and we were pissed about
it
because we decided the exchange sucked, but at least he had coverage and
now
he won't.
Now he doesn't have any.
Yeah, it's like people had to start like actually thinking about it.
Yeah. And that's why it's not going to pass because they're going home and they're talking to, or they're going to these town halls and they're making phone calls and they're like, the fuck you doing? Not take away my health care.
Well, we thought about this for a while, right? Like we talked a lot, like, the night Trump was elected, we said, okay, Obamacare is going away. It's going to be politically disastrous, but they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to realize, like, I don't know if it's possible.
I don't either.
And it's like,
I think they're starting to realize it too.
Well, we had that calculus, right? That, like, we saw this coming. Like, it's going to be disastrous and it's going to be frightening and it's going to be horrible. And we're going to stop them from doing it. But if they did it, it would be politically suicidal.
Yes.
But they still might just do it anyway.
Yes.
Because they're that rabid. Mm-hmm. But there's just not enough crazy Freedom Caucus types in all of Congress to do that.
Right.
That are willing to just implode and go down with the ship. Not that many crazy ideologues.
Yep.
I mean, the ones that do just hold this tremendous sway and power to keep anything from getting done. But from actually passing legislation, this is why gridlock. They keep talking about the two-party system because of gridlock.
Right.
The gridlock right now, because remember,
we have no power.
The Republican Party has all three branches of government and essentially the Supreme Court. They have, by overwhelming numbers, certainly in the House, they have the House, they have the Senate, they have the White House, and they essentially have a 5-4 split now in the Supreme Court. So where is the gridlock coming from?
Don't Democrats, blame the Democrats.
Say, Mitch McConnell just nuked the filibuster.
Yeah.
Which he could do again.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that we're stuck in partisan gridlock because of two parties.
No.
It is one party.
Correct.
That has completely gummed up their own works.
Yes.
And they cannot govern.
Correct.
Now, look, this may come to a head sooner than you think, right? They just passed a 1-week stopgap funding for the government.
Yes.
There are still hills to die on by next week.
Yes.
I don't think they're going to do it, but you'd never know.
I know. It's hilarious because we had the same thing, right? 2008, we had control of the House, control of the Senate, and control of the White House.
Well, that was different. I mean, like,
no, and we got shit done.
Well, we had
Democrats
to.
Got shit done.
Well, that's the scary part too, right? We were literally on the verge of worldwide economic meltdown.
Yes.
It looked like all the banks were going to go belly up and people literally didn't know what was going to happen. Some people were like, you know what, it'll be fine. And some people were like, no, the entire world economy could seriously melt down and we could go to Mad Max.
Yes.
And Obama said essentially like, okay, if there's even a chance of that happening, we have no choice but to pass a giant stimulus and bail these fucking banks out, and then let's figure out how to keep this from happening again. Which, by the way, Trump and the Republicans are trying to undo all of that.
But they're what I'm saying, exactly. But like, so we did that, and we saved the world economy, essentially, and got the money back from the banks. It's all been paid back in full. Also, by the way, passed a healthcare law, passed a bunch of things to help. The Lilly Ledbetter Act was the first... thing he did. I mean, there was a lot of shit that got done between 2008 and 2010 because when Democrats are in power, we know how to fucking govern because we have solid economic principles that actually make sense. Because
we're there to govern.
Yes. And we believe in government.
We're not there. I mean, some of them, not all Democrats, but enough Democrats are there to actually govern and be public servants rather than put something on their resume to go into the K Street lobbying business as soon as they're done. Or just to be...
Well, a lot of them want to do that too. But the point is...
Mindless blowhard ideologues.
The Democratic Party believes in government, believes in governing, and knows how to do it. We proved that in 2008. Mm-hmm. The Republicans know how to make the Democrats look bad, which is why 2010 happened. They're really good at messaging.
Yes.
But we are good at governing. And they are proving that they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, and messaging still sells better.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
It is. So that's where we are after 100 days. We are, you know, if Trump makes it through 4 years and God forbid gets reelected, which the came out now, like just 100 days in, like, would you reelect Trump? It was like 35-55 against. And it depends, obviously, who the Democratic candidate is. If it's somebody that they can villainize, he could win again.
Yep.
And if the media is complicit in that and James Comey and whatever. But I guess the point is this. After 100 days, where are we? We are potentially on the brink of completely unnecessary war with somebody.
Yep. And all that is as a means to try to distract from the Russia stuff, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Like, if we go to war, then nobody will be talking about it anymore.
No.
Just pick somebody. Just, I don't know. North Korea, sure. Or Syria's bad. My daughter cried, so I bombed them, but that didn't, I don't really want to do that. So, I don't know. But we'll figure it out. We'll be at war soon.
Well, it's been a big week for Ivanka, too. Mm-hmm. It was, I think it was earlier in the week, or I don't know if it was last week, that she went to Germany. And
I think it was this week.
She got a very chilly reception.
Yes.
And they asked some very tough questions. Mm-hmm. And it spawned all these think pieces and talks about how much influence she has and how much power. And... supposedly she cares about all these progressive causes, but none of that...
women and families and all this shit.
None of that is transpiring in her father's platform whatsoever. Ooh. So...
yeah, she said something about him being a champion for working families, and that's when
she got booed.
Because it's bullshit, obviously. And working mothers and women, and then he... what was the thing he did right after that that was like, oh, really?
Well, he appointed a big time anti-choice lady
to Health and Human Services. Right. Yeah.
Which horrified pretty much everybody.
Yep.
So I mean,
that's the game, right? Put someone to the department that hates it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I, you know, where was Ivanka's influence there? And then
here's irritating to me. They keep saying she has all this power and all this influence. That's bullshit. She is not, that's not her purpose in all of this.
She's the moderate
making
face.
Money.
Yeah.
Her family is making money hand over fist
with
him being president. Her job, like she went to China, met with somebody, and then immediately got a bunch of trademarks, which is almost impossible to get. Then she went to Germany and stuff. Like she's going around the world making money for her family. And
under this facade of like the moderate face who loves her dad and she's going to help us. Like, yeah, it's all about money. It's all it is, period.
And the media buys that, which is infuriating.
Yes.
So either...
If she had any influence at all...
Well, it's one of two things, right? Either...
This would not be happening.
It's a bogus front to distract the media, which is working, or... She just doesn't actually care about this stuff. She cares enough to talk about it, and she thinks if she talks about it, something might filter through. You know, or she's just a
big... She doesn't give a shit. She wants money. That's all this is about.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then the whole, like...
It's good for her brand to seem moderate. It's not about politics or policies or anything else. It's good for her brand.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
And the media eats it up.
Yes. They're helping her sell her brand so she can make even more money. And nobody's fucking talking about it. And I want to burn it down. Like, what the fuck?
Well, we are, and Maddo is, and a couple other people. But should we pivot to that, to how Ivanka got yet another Fox good old boy in trouble? Or he got himself in trouble?
Oh, my God. Like, I don't like her. Obviously, we just went on a rampage about her. But this is unacceptable. It's fucking gross. This guy, Jesse Waters. There's been a big shakeup at Fox, obviously, after Bill left.
Let's talk about who Jesse Waters is. Jesse Waters was like Bill O'Reilly's attack dog guy who would ambush people with so-called interviews and just like chase them into garages or their house and have the camera crew there and just ask them a bunch of loaded questions to try to get them to, you know, say no comment and walk away or whatever.
Okay.
So that's his shtick.
And then he just got bumped to a higher, like he had his own show and got bumped up to a higher thing because Billow's out.
Billow is out for sexual harassment.
Correct.
And just being a disgusting, awful, misogynist pig. So what does Jesse Waters do like the first day he gets bumped up?
He was talking about how hypocritical the left is.
Because we don't like
Ivanka Trump. For all the reasons that I just said. And if we're like a champion of women, why would we do that? And it's like, that is a fucking, that's an interesting argument. And then he made this disgusting hand motion and comment that said, but I really liked the way she was holding that microphone. Implying that like he was imagining her blowing him via the microphone. Right?
It was subtle, but obvious.
If you're a woman, it's plain as day.
Oh, even to me, it was plain as day. And I'm a dumb guy.
It was not subtle to me at all. But people were like, well, that could be misconstrued. I don't think he meant it that way. And he came back and said, no, I didn't mean it that way. I meant her smooth, jazzy voice. And like,
that kind of made it even worse.
What does that have to do with her holding the microphone? Her voice is determined by how she holds. No, you fucking know. No.
So Fox News, which is in complete retreat damage mode right now, sent him on, quote,
family vacation.
Unplanned family vacation. There goes another one. They can't help themselves.
Because
I mean, who's going to be left but Shepard Smith?
He's gay. Because he is. Legit.
I know.
Because they have created a culture, like we talked about last week, where it is completely permissible and acceptable to treat women like objects and to harass and assault them within the culture. And sometimes that shit's going to come out on air because
it's DNA.
It's permeated throughout the organization. It's just the way it is there.
Yeah.
So sometimes somebody's going to slip and say something. And, you know, the thing about that comment is I don't think he was a gaffe because I don't think it ever would occur to him that that would be a bad thing to say or do.
No.
To sexualize and objectify.
And 5 years ago or 2 years ago, nobody would have cared. But like now the radar is up.
Yeah.
And since all the litigation has come to light, it's like now they're under a microscope.
Yeah.
And what does this guy do? Two days after his big promotion, when his boss gets canned.
Yeah.
He goes right back to that road.
Yep. Because he doesn't.
On prime time.
But,
wasn't it?
Yeah. That's the thing is he doesn't even understand that that would be a bad thing to do.
No, not
that was
for
a compliment.
Network.
That I was saying something nice about her.
She's
probably got great blowjob skills. The president's not like you just
president's
it,
daughter.
And it just never would just not occur to him, and frankly, to a lot of people, they're going to be. I can already hear it. Like this is getting blown out of proportion, and he didn't really say anything that bad. And I mean, it's fair.
I'm not hearing much of
it's
that.
It's fair if President Trump.
Trump can say grab him by the pussy and get elected president, but this guy doesn't really say anything even remotely that bad.
No, he's more subtle about it.
So
I don't know if
I get it, but
yeah, still, we'll see if he gets fired because, gross. You know, if he gets fired, I think he would have a case to say, hey, I'm being punished for the sins of O'Reilly. Yeah. I mean, you didn't have to pay out a bunch of settlements for me. Well, I mean, maybe they have. Who
knows? That's the other thing. Right. Maybe this happened. People got mad and they looked into his whatever and were like, fuck.
Well, there's more problems at Fox. And this hasn't been talked about very much, but we are going to, when I think this all gets much more public, is the fact that there is now a pending class action lawsuit for racial discrimination at Fox.
Yeah, I big just shocker, saw something. Huh? No.
I think there's at least 11 people.
Good.
Who are making claims. And yeah, I mean, the walls are all kind of crumbling down over there.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. The whole conservative bent, right, that's anti what they call political correctness, uh-huh. and anti-feminism, uh-huh. and anti-affirmative action.
Yes.
It's like if you're the National Review or George Will, you can sit there and wrap that in a pseudo-intellectual, moderate-sounding, intellectual academic facade. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to get big cable ratings doing that. That's boring.
Yes. Talking about black on black crime and showing fake statistics, however, that gets white people real riled up.
And saying,
or black on white crime,
and
sorry.
Saying, why are we talking about sexual harassment? It should be a compliment. I feel complimented when I get whistled at.
I love when
that,
I get catcalled.
As Andrea Tantaro said before she turned around and sued the network for doing the very things that she said were okay.
Well, that's different, actually, I would argue, because getting catcalled is on the street, I think, a lesser...
Than workplace, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, than getting sexually harassed at work. That affects your everyday... I mean, it's complicated, but yes. But yeah, I mean, it's totally... It is hypocritical as well.
Sure, sure. And we've never really gotten that deep into that. I still will one day.
Yeah. We'll do some more research first. Yeah. But anyway...
It's like Megyn Kelly eventually had enough and said... Forget it. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me at all that there's a racial component to it at Fox, because of course that the purpose of that network is to cater to rich old white dudes,
racial resentment
and sexism.
Absolutely.
Women have their place and it's not where it is right now. And why can't we go back to the good old days and all
no,
this
no,
shit?
It's seriously, it's Mad Men, right?
Yeah.
That's their selling point. Their selling point is, don't you old white people all miss a simpler time when everybody in the workplace was white and women knew their place, mm-hmm. and men could say and do whatever they wanted.
And the only jobs that black people held were jobs that, like,
service.
Yeah. Like, your wife would stay home and hire a black woman to take care of your kid. Or there would be a black guy that would help you in the elevator. Or
coupled,
be a butler, that kind of thing. But they didn't have positions of authority or power.
Coupled with the idea that the ones that do only do because of affirmative action.
I'm saying back in the day they didn't, because we didn't have affirmative action.
No,
can't we go back to that time?
Right, right.
And now...
Right, coupled with this modern idea.
Yes, that all of that has been taken away from us. These people coming in and taking... our power away from us, taking our entitlement away from us.
So, so the point is, it's impossible, and this is proving to be impossible, it's impossible to take that angle and sell that without having your on-air personalities and people behind the scenes that just blatantly cross the line and actually break laws.
Obviously,
And it goes beyond that. Now, Fox News is being investigated for wire fraud and all kinds of other stuff, and I'm not exactly sure how that relates to all this, but...
I don't think it does, probably, but just the...
It might.
The idea of the culture of that place, it doesn't surprise me at all, and I hope that everything falls apart.
Yeah, I mean, it'll fall apart maybe to a certain extent, but the Murdochs are going to protect their golden goose one way or another. Like, if they have to pare it down and find a whole new generation of awful, terrible... racist, misogynist, right-wing people, then they will, or maybe they'll just go full on Alex Jones. I don't know.
I don't either. But
But we'll keep an eye on it.
Alex Jones is in the news too.
Yeah, lost his child custody case.
Yeah, his child custody. Well, he's a complete wackadoo, and then the lawyer's defense is the same as the Fox News defense. Yes. It's not news; it's entertainment.
Right.
He's just playing.
This
a
is
character.
An on-air personality. Yeah. It's in what it was imaginary or invented or something.
How do you take that if you're an Alex Jones fan? I guess you just rationalize that it's what he has to say in court, but he doesn't really mean that. I mean, I don't know. I can't get in the head
of a person who listens to Alex fucking Jones. Seriously, I can't. I have no clue.
But that's a huge part of the Trump base.
Uh-huh.
So it's like we almost like kind of have to get in their heads, right?
And the
chemtrails.
The
I'm surprised Trump hasn't said anything about chemtrails yet.
Men's rights activists will jump all over it because...
Oh, sure.
Isn't it awful that we don't give men custody of babies, blah, blah, blah.
Hey, we have a men's rights activist that's harassing us on our Twitter account last couple days.
Oh, really?
A very brave, bold, non-avatar, grayed-out person who has 4 followers.
Oh, the cave guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like, women would still be starving in caves if it wasn't for men because men build boats and airplanes and women never build anything.
Mm-hmm. Bring me fish. I don't know. Yeah. He's, I don't care.
Well, as I was saying, I really want to, that inspired me. I really want to build a bar called The Cave now.
Yeah. Women only.
Women only, yeah. Lesbian bar, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So women's only bar.
Yeah.
You in?
Yeah. I'm so down. Yeah. Anyway.
So what else can we say about the first 100 days?
Nothing. I'm tired of that talk.
Oh, well, let's talk about what just came out in the news, right? Surprise to nobody. There was either a candid or on record. Trump basically said, I hate this job.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
way
I
harder
love
than
this.
I thought it was going to be. I miss my old
it's
life.
It's way more work than I thought it was going to be. The fucking presidency.
Yeah.
I miss my old life. It was much easier. It's more work than I thought it was
going to
be.
And besides us, it's sort of been met with a shrug. And
no, I disagree with that. Everybody's kind of like, I don't think anyone is surprised to hear him say that, but it is shocking that a president would say it. I think everyone understands that he feels that way without him saying it. The shocking thing, I think, that everybody's like, you said that out loud to the press.
So here's the question then, right? Now, he's doing things like tonight he's going to have a big rally, and that's going to recharge his batteries a little bit, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He'll start a war, and that'll recharge his batteries. If he's feeling like this now, and then double it, and you're only 200 days in, you're not even a year into your presidency, is he just going to quit?
I think maybe. I don't know. The thing that was really surprising to me about the statement was, for all of his narcissism and ego and like his incredible inability to see any flaw in his own person, for him to admit like, man, this is hard. I don't like it. I'm not very good at it. And I'm getting criticized a lot. And
the old life was
easier.
Almost
and
a tiny
so
bit
work.
Humanizing.
It's like, well, I guess that's not my point. For him to say that, he must really be at either a position of like desperation, or I don't understand how we can square that with his general personality. Like,
we can. Go back and listen to our old episodes when it was starting to look like, oh my God, Trump might actually win the nomination, and if he wins the nomination, I suppose it's possible he could be president. Over and over and over and over again, we said he doesn't want to be president. He wants to run for president,
right.
And he wants to win the presidency for
right.
his ego.
Right.
But do you think he wants to do the job?
Why
no.
did he say it out loud? Why did he admit out loud to the press, like, this is really hard. I'm not very, you know, like, that's the part that I don't understand.
Oh,
admitting it. Like,
I think
that him admitting that he's not very good at something and that it's harder than he thought it was going to be does not square with, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, most tremendous, everything I do is wonderful and amazing, and it's going
to
be the best.
To
and
me,
now he's like,
To me it does. Because it goes with the ego thing too, right?
No.
To me it does, in a roundabout way. Because Trump's whole shtick, and the whole reason one of the big reasons he was really popular was he's got no filter at all, right?
mm-hmm. and he says whatever the hell is on his mind, and he tweets whatever the hell is on his mind. And yeah, maybe there are some moments, I don't even want to call it self-doubt. It's not that he's being like, oh, I can't do this job. It's him saying, I'm not having fun anymore. This isn't fun anymore.
It's too much work.
And he can get away with that for the same reason where it occurred to him in the middle of a campaign rally, like, my followers are so devoted that I can shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and not be arrested. Right. Like, that was very illuminating. And I think that is the same train of thought when he says, you know what? I don't even really like this job anymore. I miss just being Donald Trump. I miss being on The Apprentice. I miss grabbing pussies. You know?
Yeah, like, I have to actually work, and it's bumming me out, and I don't like it.
And people say no. And people say no to me.
Yeah.
A lot now.
Yeah. What? I don't understand. So.
And then he's
having. I'm the president.
And he's having to back down on stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's part of him is actually sort of trying to take the job seriously. Because every time we think he's about to go off the rails, it was like. Remember, a week ago, we thought maybe he was going to shut the government down if he didn't get his health care vote, right? Yeah. Yeah. And we said, okay, well, that is going to melt down his presidency and the Republican Party. Let's see if he does it. And ultimately, he threatened to, but then he didn't.
Yep.
Because ultimately, he's like, I guess I got to do this job. And part of actually doing this job and keeping a functioning White House is, because I can't really shut down the government over this thing that people aren't on board with right now.
Right.
So, like, there is some calculus of a semi-responsible person there in the very, very, very slimmest of angles.
Yeah. I also think he didn't understand what the presidency was. And I don't mean that, like, how much work it was. Obviously, that's true. But I think he sort of thought he was being elected king. And it's very frustrating for him, I think, that, like, I can just hear him, like, when he talks about the courts striking shit down that he does.
Yeah.
With this, like, I'm the president. How can some judge just tell me no? And you're like, you don't understand what the government, how... And
sort of,
there have
yes.
been leaks coming out that said, like, he did not understand how the function of government works at all.
I think that is a little bit of hyperbole. I'm sure he knows about separation of powers. I think what he assumed was, I won... And I'm sure he fooled himself into thinking he had this huge mandate and that all these illegal immigrants voted for Hillary Clinton. That's why he lost the popular vote. And I think he thought he had the sort of mandate and power where that everybody would just go along with his shit.
But that's what I'm saying. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of government.
Well, it's a fundamental misunderstanding.
If you do something unconstitutional, no, it doesn't matter how popular you are. If you do something unconstitutional, the court's going to strike it down. It doesn't make any difference if it's popular or not. If you do something unconstitutional, the court is required to strike it down. I don't give a shit if you feel like you have a mandate. That's how courts work.
No, that's the whole point
of having a judicial branch be unelected.
It's not that he doesn't understand.
Separate and co-equal.
He would celebrate every time a judge would hold up or strike down anything Obama did. So he understands how it works. He just didn't think they would dare to do that to him, is my point. But what difference does it make? It's the same effect, right?
Yes.
It's that I have... King Trump has declared an edict. How dare you say no?
Yeah. I'm the president, and you're just some judge in San Francisco. And it's like, okay, well, that's how it works. I mean, that's...
Or you're just some judge in Hawaii that's not really a state, which is like what Sessions said.
Yeah.
Oh, Sessions. What a piece of work he is. There's another reason why he's still popular. He appointed Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions, a guy too racist... to be a federal judge in 1980, is now head of the Department of Justice.
He is literally the scariest man in government for me. Yeah. I've been saying it since it started. It makes me weepy to even think about it. Yeah, it's horrifying.
Could it be worse, though? Like, we started watching The Handmaid's Tale, and you started commenting about... I think you just kind of said out loud at one point, oh, my God, President Pence.
Yeah. Yeah. Legit.
It's like, legit. Maybe we thought, like, you know, it'll be horrible, but at least it'll be something like a functioning government under Mike Pence. Like, well.
Uh-huh. No. I mean, if Pence had his way and he was king, it would be The Handmaid's Tale. But I don't think that he has the ability to fundamentally destabilize the government in the way that. The Handmaid's Tale is, but it is
that's
terrifying. I mean, I read the book 3 different times. It's my very favorite book of all time,
uh-huh.
And I've listened to it on audio like twice. And The show is taking a lot of liberties, but I think it has to because of the way the book is written.
We've only watched a couple episodes so far.
Stream of consciousness. And it would be really difficult.
No spoilers,
to,
by the way. Don't email us with
stop
spoilers.
Stop interrupting me. It would be... Nope, I lost it.
Sorry.
Anyway, it's great. I love it. It's horrifying, and it feels very much like I'm stepping into the mind of people that think like Pence, and this is their like little fantasy land. This is the dream for them,
where women are nothing but breeders,
yep,
or matriarchs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of social commentary that I could do. I could do an entire hour talking about The Handmaid's Tale and the evangelical right and how it affects feminism and how women keep each other down because of patriarchy. Like, there's a million things that we could talk about, but
we will.
That's for a different time.
Yeah, we'll get to it all.
Once we
maybe
finish.
We'll do a whole, once we're done watching this first season,
yeah,
probably do a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back. We're going to talk about more stuff, and I'll shut up and let Rachel finish her sentences, I promise. I was just trying to say no spoilers because I could see people like tweeting us and emailing us like, oh, what did you think of episode 5?
Right.
Or this and that happened.
Yeah, yeah. No. Don't do that.
No, because it's not following the book and it's going off on its own tangent.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is, it's, but it's great.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We were talking about the first 100 days of the Trump fiasco.
And I want to transition. I want to bitch about Bernie Sanders a little bit more.
All right. Have at it.
So last week we were talking about his lack of support for John Ossoff in the Georgia election.
Which he figured out was stupid and then turned around, but
yes,
can't unring the bell.
And then he supported this guy, Mello, for a race.
In Nebraska, right?
And this guy is anti-choice.
Anti-choice, yeah. Anti-choice Democrat.
And it spawned a bunch of conversations between me and some women that I know and a bunch of pieces that I read. And beyond just this idea of Democratic unity and we need to take back the House in 2018 and we need to support progressive candidates, all of that is important, but I need someone to explain to Bernie Sanders and all of the other economic justice warriors two things. You cannot have economic justice without reproductive rights.
Well said.
And you cannot have economic justice without civil rights.
Yes.
Women cannot have economic justice if they cannot determine when to have children and if they want to have children. You cannot saddle women with children that they do not want and cannot support and call that economic justice.
Of course not. Of course not.
It's not about, it's a fundamental principle, right? The same way that you cannot have economic justice if you don't have civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
If black people are being rounded up and put in prisons, they can't have economic justice. If they can't walk, it's all in, it's, that is progressive values. And somebody needs to explain that to somebody because I
it shouldn't and need to be explained in the year 2017. And you call yourself a progressive. This is not something we should need to explain.
I will not support any candidate. I don't care. I do not care. I will not support any candidate, nor should the Democratic Party support any candidate who does not believe in full reproductive justice, period. Full stop. None of this bullshit. Bernie came out and he's like, oh, well, you know, it's a big tent. There's room for everybody, even if you don't believe in this.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
You know, blah, blah, blah. Fuck you. Exactly. No, no, it's not.
No.
We don't have a big enough tent. We have a big enough tent for white dudes. And that's it. That's Bernie's fucking tent.
We can't play the purity game on one side to the point where it's like, I don't know if I want to support your Democratic wunderkind who can actually help take Democrats take a red Republican seat, because I don't know if he's pure enough.
Right.
And then literally the next day say, well, okay, maybe this guy's anti-choice, but let's have a big tent so we can take back Congress. It's like, no, you literally said the opposite yesterday.
Because his tent has nothing to do with women or minorities or any rights other than this very, very narrow idea of what economic justice means.
Yes.
And
he should know better.
Yes.
And he does know better. I seem to remember him touching on that during the campaign.
No.
Like, did that I was just the imagine
one,
that?
Yeah, that was the one thing that I was always yelling and screaming about was...
Even when we were caucusing for him.
Why, especially after, but why is it that I don't ever hear him talk about, except for, like, with his big, giant crowds of people, he'll talk to Killer Mike about it, so you know he knows. He'll talk to women's groups about it, so you know he knows. But he doesn't say out loud. He doesn't connect the fucking dots for people. And we have to start talking as Democrats about what connecting those dots. So this whole idea that he's been railing against identity politics, right? LGBT rights, reproductive rights, civil rights, criminal justice reform. These are identity politics.
Right. It has to be more
broad. It has to
be
more broad and just talk about economic justice. And that is bullshit.
And that is the blanket for, it's the panacea for everything.
Yes. That's bullshit. We have to connect the dots. They're all connected. If you want economic justice, we have to have these other, that means for everybody. That's not just rich white people and poor white people. We need to make that disparity less. It's everybody. And other minority groups have problems and are disproportionately affected by things that may not affect those white working class voters. That does not mean that we just ignore them and say, well, that's identity politics, don't worry about it, what we're really focused. No, that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive values require inclusion, and inclusion, if you want to call it identity politics, I don't give a shit, but inclusion means everybody. And I'm so fucking tired of him. Anyway, that's my thing. I've been having a lot of conversations about it lately, and and I think the Democratic Party also needs to realize that women make up like 58% of the Democratic Party, and women are leaders of a lot of these movements. Women are a mainstay of the Democratic Party, and for you to ignore something that is so fundamental to our rights, or pretend it doesn't matter, or that it's politically stupid.
Let's talk about...
And by the way, this unity tour, why isn't there a woman? Why is it a dude that's not a Democrat and another dude?
Well, because it's supposed to represent both sides of the spectrum. Tom Perez is supposed to be the establishment face of the Democratic Party, and Bernie is supposed to be the upstart, ultra ideological wing of the Democratic Party, or the progressive movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it just so happens they're both men. But that leads into my next point.
Are we saying that there are no women that are progressive? I mean, I how about Elizabeth Warren?
Oh, no. Oh, Elizabeth Warren is she's trying to work against that, was saying something stupid this week, but she is the, and also I'll get to Elizabeth Warren, and Trump called her Pocahontas again, and mm-hmm. you have so-called reasonable conservatives defending that this mm-hmm. week. She is now the big bad establishment. She's establishment Dem, according to most of the Bernie people, right? But anyway,
I don't know.
Here's my question, or here is my point. The core of the Bernie movement, especially like the Bernie or Bust movement. Yeah, there are some Bernie gals there, but it's mostly what? It's mostly young white men.
Yes.
Yes, there are some African Americans. Yes, there are some Hispanic people. There's some women, but there's some fedoras.
Mm-hmm.
There's,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of like jaded libertarians and, you know, couple MRAs work their way in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of dudes.
Yep.
It's a lot of dudes, and.
But that's fine. I don't care. I guess it's the point is that we're on this Democratic unity tour, and I don't understand
what the message is supposed to be.
You're right.
Because I'm a Democrat, and we have the most progressive platform for the Democratic Party that we've ever had.
Yes.
Those are democratic values. That platform is what we should be talking about. That's the message. Instead, we've got this guy on this tour who's not a Democrat, talking shit about women's rights, supporting candidates that don't support women's rights, not supporting candidates who could actually help Democrats take back the House because he's not a Democrat. I don't understand what we're doing. What is the message? What are we trying to tell people? I think the message should be, hey, here's our platform. Here's what we decided as a party. This is why you should support us.
Mm-hmm.
And connect the dots for people who maybe aren't Democrats and say, look, I know you want economic justice. That we do too. And here's all the parts of that. Here's how we're going to help you. That's the point of the Democratic Party is we want to help people.
I think they're trying to do that.
They're failing.
But the message is so muddled because, as I said before, Bernie Sanders, for all the good he's done, is a doddering old man on an ego trip.
Yep.
And he doesn't really... she's not really interested in a coherent message to help the party. He's interested in his own pet politics coming front and center. The fate of the party be damned.
So why is he on the Democratic Unity Tour?
Because it's...
Kick him the fuck out and get a Democrat that's a woman and let's start talking about the platform we all agreed to.
Because it's another chance for him to be on the stump in front of cameras and big audiences.
But why are we letting him? That's what I'm asking.
Well,
let him go do that on his own.
Tom Perez and the DNC thought this would be a good opportunity to show unity, except guess what? Bernie's not playing ball again.
Yep. So,
which is fine. He doesn't have to. He
can do whatever he wants. We don't have to give him our platform.
Exactly.
We don't have to do that.
Exactly.
So we have to not do that.
If Bernie wants to go up there and have an incoherent message about this guy is not pure enough, but this guy, don't worry about his purity because we need to, you know, take back the White House or we need to take back Congress and it doesn't make any sense. That's his, yeah.
Good, go say it somewhere else. But we don't have to give him our platform.
No.
And we don't have to all of a sudden decide that that our Democratic platform and values aren't ours anymore because Bernie says. Like, I'm just so fed up. I'm so fed up.
Yeah. I've been basically ignoring the Unity Tour because of what you're saying. Like, the message is so muddled.
I care about our party, and I care about winning the fucking midterms in 2018.
The
plan is? It's fucking ridiculous.
And you really get the sense that, I'm sure Perez does too, but I don't know what Bernie Sanders cares about, except for Bernie Sanders being in front of cameras.
Yep.
And his very, very narrow interpretation of the and his idea that the what he calls economic justice is the panacea for all, the way he interprets it.
That's right. And we are allowing that to be the message. We're giving him a platform and we're saying, okay, whatever Bernie determines is purity and whatever Bernie determines is economic justice, that's the definition now. Ignoring like everyone else. It's maddening. And we're just going to fuck it up again. If we don't start talking to people about why we're right and how to connect the dots to their lives and not just fucking white dudes, like, we're going to lose.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think Bernie kind of sees it in a way
that... Like, why would minority voters come out and vote in 2018 if we aren't talking about their issues and we're saying they don't matter? We're going to have low turnout among women. We're going to have low turnout among minority voters. Why would they vote Democrat? Why would they vote at all?
Well, and that happened a little bit, didn't it? You can look at a lot of different things and say how Trump just barely got over the top. You could say it was those couple undecided voters that changed their mind at the last minute because of the Comey letter. It was a slight downtick in millennial voters because disgruntled Bernie people stayed home. There's a lot of things you could say, but guess what? African American voters, there was just a tiny little tiny tick down in participation of African American voters. Little tick down, but guess what? Enough to flip the script. And a lot of people want to say, and I think this is pretty insulting, oh, well, that's identity politics. There wasn't a black guy running, so...
Right, that's bullshit.
Maybe, well, we don't know for sure, but maybe what you're saying has something to do with it.
But it is. And black voters, I would like to give a lot of fucking credit to. They show up,
in large numbers, mm-hmm. and they vote overwhelmingly Democrat. That, and especially black women, like, they are leaders of our party.
Absolutely.
And we treat them like they are.
Especially now. Especially yes. now. We have said, well, the new revolution and the people that are forgotten in this country are the white working class voters. And we need to know what makes them tick. And we need to sit down in the diner and listen to their concerns. And again and again and again, their concerns comes down to brown people are getting the stuff that I deserve. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. And Bernie has sort of jumped into that. Hook, line, and sinker. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say it, guys, but he says it very plainly, yep. and you can ignore it, or you can deny it, and you cannot care, but that's the reality.
Yes.
And just maybe, because everybody said this, even liberals, when the autopsy came out, and there was the small but significant downtick in African-American voters' participation in places like North Carolina, mm-hmm. like Wisconsin, like several other key states, Pennsylvania, people wanted to say, oh, well, no, Obama, that's why. Well, maybe it was because all across the aisle, all of a sudden, there was this, well, look out, because here come the white working class voters, and somebody's finally listening to what they care about. And would that not turn you off to the process a little bit?
Yes, if you hear not just the Republicans doing this racist dog whistling, but the Democratic Party saying...
And the entire media?
And the entire media all over saying, well, you know, white working class voters and da da. They understand what the fuck that means.
Yeah, of course they do.
So if we do not start speaking to these people and their actual real... fucking concerns, like, then we will fail again and again. And it's the same thing with women. If our party abandons reproductive rights as a fundamental core value, we are fucked with women.
Oh, we're not going to. I think that was an ugly blip on the radar, but it was a telling blip.
And Tom Perez came out and said unequivocally that is a Democratic value and we will not tolerate. But then we cannot support candidates
Who are anti-choice.
I don't give a shit. We cannot as a party support candidates that are anti-choice, period.
No.
For me, that is an absolute litmus test.
Or if you want to say, well, maybe we let a few of them in our bigger tent, then don't dare turn around and say, well, this other guy in Georgia's not pure enough or might not be pure enough, because then you're just full of shit. You don't know what you're talking about and your message is incoherent, like you said.
Yep.
So it's like right now there's one party that has a completely incoherent message, and that's finally starting to filter through and realize, wait, these people don't know how to govern and don't know what they're doing, and they're off the rocker. So now we're trying to match them with incoherence?
Yeah, apparently. That's I don't know. But we don't seem to be very good at this politics thing, and it's making me fucking crazy.
Yeah, and that's what this unity tour is, right? It's incoherence and taking for granted of the core of what our makes our party work.
Yes.
And you've seen this, and I see this with the supposed progressive, like the friggin' Young Turks and the, you know, whoa, we have got to get back into the heartland and, you know, make these people feel included. And it's like, dude.
No, we don't have to do that.
You know who could massage that because they were really, really good at politics was Bill Clinton.
Yep.
But Bill Clinton, Tom Perez, and Bernie Sanders, you are not.
How about, right, how about instead we start to come up with ideas about how we can overhaul the criminal justice system? Like, for example, Denver is a good example of, they're doing some real actual things with this.
Uh-huh.
And this is partly about immigration, but it's partly about criminal justice reform. Mayor Hancock and city council have this plan. So because ICE is expanding the sort of rounding up of people with criminal records, right?
Yeah.
Their sort of threshold is if the penalty for this crime is a year or more, then you're on the kind of top of the list. And so Denver is changing the way that we classify certain misdemeanors and felonies so that they're in three classes. One is now for the most serious offenses like multiple domestic violence, sort of more serious things, it'll still be a year. But there's two other classes that are now less than a year. One of them is like 6 months and one of them is like 3 months maximum, right? Which does two things. First of all, we don't need to be putting people in jail for minor things for that long. And second, it's helping to allay the fears of the immigrant community so that we're declassifying them for ICE, right? That's a concrete, real step forward that Denver is taking, and I love it. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that are seriously going to impact the citizens who live in this city positively. Those are the kind of thing. Now, that has nothing to do with white working class voters at all.
Right.
But it does have to do with immigrant populations that currently live in this city and definitely are going to vote Democrat if they are citizens.
Yeah.
And because this applies to this rounding up thing.
Yeah.
Also applies to people with green cards and visas that are here legally. They can still totally get deported and they're doing that. So, so anyway, that's a Democratic value.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing that impacts people's lives. And if we can connect that to the Democratic Party and say, this is what we will do for you on the local level, you know, in state legislatures, city councils, tie that to the Democratic Party.
That's how we win.
That's how we win. Right?
We just suck at messaging.
We suck.
So much.
So bad.
Yeah. And this was, we saw this during the presidential campaign and I think we were just kind of in denial. We saw it a lot. And it's not that Hillary didn't try, just didn't come very naturally to her. Didn't come very naturally to her campaign, I think. And we were like, I don't know about the messaging, but we'll win anyway.
Right. And she has such good ideas and she'll fix a lot of things and blah, blah, blah.
It'll filter through, but it really didn't.
We really have to connect the dots. And since we have absolutely no power at a federal level, none whatsoever, we have to focus in on communities where we do have power.
Yeah.
That's your state legislature. That's your city council. That's where we say, hey, we're Democrats and this is what Democrats do.
We would hope, but we're still very much at the infighting level and we deal with that here, right?
Yeah.
We get emails about some unknown Green Party person who has no experience in politics and has no platform and no ideas. They're just, hey, I'm a progressive and not a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Well, meanwhile, there are real Democrats with real policy positions and real chops.
And we're really making, like in Colorado, the Democrats have done some really great things at a state level. We don't control both houses, unfortunately. So there's been some awful gridlock there too. But I just feel like the party needs to focus on that local level.
Yes.
And say, this is what Democrats in your city, in your state are doing. If you elect us in 2018 to the federal level, we'll continue that good work.
Yeah, and it's tougher for us because, I mean, they think that we have all the Soros money and maybe there's some out there, but we don't have ALEC, right? We don't have Koch money.
Right.
That creates all these, as Kagro calls it, campaign in a box.
Yeah.
Where they find somebody who wants to run as an R and they just have all these ALEC talking points and they have this big, big pot of money to run on and then they get elected at all these local levels and all of a sudden there's all this power that's wielded by special interests and corporations and Republicans.
Yes.
Which is where we've gotten killed on. So we have an uphill battle in that sense.
Yes.
And then make it add Citizens United on top of that cake. And this is kind of, and gerrymandering and you could see the absolute shithole we're in.
Yes.
What we do have on our side is the fact that our party and our movement is on the right side of virtually everything.
Yes.
Ask Americans if they want to preserve Planned Parenthood and reproductive rights. Yes. Ask Americans if they want to keep the ACA and make it better and work towards single payer or universal health care. Yes. Mm-hmm. Ask them what about a path to citizenship. Yes. Mm-hmm. We can win all those battles because fundamentally we are on the right side and they are on the wrong side.
But we just have to figure out.
Messaging sucks.
Yes, exactly.
We can't get through to people about this.
Yeah, because we just assume they know. We just assume they know that that's our party. And then we go around and say, never mind, because this old guy who's not a member of that party is saying some really weird shit.
Right,
like,
no,
what the fuck?
We either assume they know or we need to find the most pure of the pure to represent our pet values.
Or let's not talk about reproductive rights that much because it's kind of a divisive issue. And what about those people in the heartland? No, fuck that.
No, I think those days are mostly
over. There's an assumption with this whole white working class Bernie movement that, like, let's not talk about all this identity politics because it alienates people who don't agree with it.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's like, no, that's exactly what we should be talking about because most people agree with us.
Yes.
So I don't need those people. I don't. Because most people agree with us. We have to talk about that stuff so that it's clear that that's what our party stands for.
Right.
And most people agree.
Well, I think that's a fundamental problem, too, with in terms of understanding when it comes to the messaging, is that there's a lot of focus instead of like all the people who decided to vote third party or didn't show up or the independents. Like, we can target all them, but instead we're trying to go after the hardcore Trump voters.
Well, do you think white working class women are against abortion?
Fuck no.
Right. So we're not talking about women, are we?
No.
White working class voter does not mean women, even though there are white working class women, certainly.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
White working class men probably also support abortion.
Most of them, you would think.
And if they don't, probably they're not going to vote Democrat anyway.
Never.
So why don't we talk about it? Why don't we appeal to them and say, hey, you might need an abortion at some point. We're the party that's going to absolutely protect that.
Because there's two reasons for that. I've talked about this before. I think there's a level of guilt / fascination with a lot of the media, especially the Beltway media, that, gosh, we've been so concerned with all these progressive issues and all the concerns of the cities that we've ignored the exurb and semi-rural and rural and rust belt white people. And I feel bad about that. So they, now we have to really, really focus on them. I think that's part of it. Of course, there's a good reason for that. It's because way more people live in the cities.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like that's part of it. And I think that sentiment has filtered down to people like Bernie Sanders and certain people in the progressive movement who are kind of thinking like, we need to win back the white people that don't live in the cities.
But it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make sense to me
either.
If
you want to go, why can't we as a party talk about the Rust Belt or the coal people, right? And we have to go in and we have to say,
well, we fucked up that messaging.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Fine, we ignored you. We don't want to ignore you anymore. Let's talk. Here's what we can actually do. I'm not going to feed you a line of bullshit about bringing back coal or loving coal or isn't coal great. Coal sucks. The Democratic Party is very pro-education. What we could do is train you to do something else that pays more in a sector that's going up instead of down.
We tried. Hillary did have some. First of all, she stepped in it and said, I'm going to put coal miners out of business. And then she was pretty much dead in the water with them anyway. Yeah. And then secondly, Hillary and the Democrats did actually have some of that stuff in a platform. But it's much easier when Trump just lies and says, well, I'm going to reopen your coal mine that closed. And then you can go back to work.
But I think these people care about more than that, too. I think that we're making them one issue people. And I think,
well, I think getting that attention like Trump gave them is just part of it, right?
Yeah.
Just being there and in their face and telling them, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that for you, even if it's complete bullshit, which it is. It's like if you're, and then Hillary, of course, kind of just stayed away once she stepped in it. So that didn't help. Because it was bad. I can understand the thinking.
I guess my overarching point of all of this is we are shitty at messaging and we have to get better at it or we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And messaging means talking about the things that we actually believe in.
Yes.
And not ignoring.
And the voters are on our side about this stuff. That's the maddening part, right? Yep. Poll after poll after poll after poll. The Republicans are on the wrong side of taxes. They're on the wrong side of income inequality. They're on the wrong side of health care. They're on the wrong side of reproductive rights. They're on the wrong side of spending. They're on the wrong side of entitlements. They're on the wrong side of warmongering. They're on the wrong side of virtually everything.
Yes.
Gun rights gets a little more squeaky, although most Americans want some sensible gun rights too. Uh-huh. So it's like,
so talk about all of those things.
How do we
connect the dots to people that's our party? That's what my whole point of this entire thing is.
Exactly. Like, as a party, how do we manage to fuck up being on the right side of all the opinions? How do we manage to fuck that up?
I don't know.
It's like you have to try.
Yeah.
And we do.
Apparently. Yeah. I don't know, but I don't know. I'm very frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, like, it's a double whammy that if we got it to work, because the Republicans, the conservative movement, and the House Republicans and Donald Trump are in this like crazy groupthink space where they think they're on the right side of everything.
Right.
And then the echo chamber with the right-wing radio, it's like they will double and triple down.
Yes.
You go in there and you tell them what the difference is, and like, yeah, maybe half the time they'll lie, but the other half they'll be out there trying to sell tax cuts for the rich and yes. no insurance
right.
and endless wars and no reproductive rights, and they'll be on the wrong side of everything, and they will box themselves in, and we can't get there.
I know.
It's like we cannot connect the dots.
Exactly.
Or we're still trying to play to this non-existent middle.
Exactly.
And be wishy-washy.
Right.
And then the critics say, well, the Democrats don't stand for anything and don't have a platform. And then the way we message, it's like,
yeah, we are. We don't really. I mean, we do believe in all these things, but we can't seem to say it out loud and point out the insanity that they're going to do. So we just sit here and go, I'm sure they'll vote for us. And it's like, no, they're not. Oh, my God.
You have got to tell them.
It's craziness.
I think we also forget, especially as very politically involved people, that our coworkers and our friends and our relatives and our cousins who live in Des Moines, they do not sleep, eat, and breathe politics the way they do. Mm-mm. They're bored by it, and they'll tune in for snippets come election season, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. They're lazy. which makes me crazy.
Well,
but
you know what? I don't even attribute it to laziness, right?
Busy.
Not everybody is built to absorb and understand and think about politics the way we do all the time. They're just not. You know?
So I guess. I think it's
if they don't pay attention the way...
Obnoxiously privileged to not follow politics.
Well, think about when you were a little kid, right? And this is going to sound very condescending, and I'm sort of going against my own... themes here of getting a message across. But think about when you're a little kid. Before you learn to critically think about stuff, you just what you hear is what you know.
Yeah.
Like urban legends, and the kid ate Pop Rocks and Coke and his stomach blew up, and you know, and Santa arrives on a sleigh, whatever it is, it's like you know what's out there in the ether. And Republicans have figured out if you just keep repeating a message, it'll get into the public consciousness, and then yeah. people will just repeat it, and then it becomes reality, right?
Yes.
Like Hillary Clinton is really untrustworthy, and yes. she killed Vince Foster or whatever. And Trump is a great businessman.
Right.
When you actually research the facts, none of that adds up. But if it's just out there and you don't pay attention, and especially if you're in an echo chamber, then that's what filters through.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's part of the messaging problem.
And when I talk to my Republican friend at work, that's a lot of what I hear from her.
Oh, yeah.
Is
yeah,
it's what just, it's just exactly
echo,
that. And
echo
then,
chamber politics.
Yeah, and then and there is nuance in public policy, and we can't figure out how to message our nuance in a way that will infiltrate the same way that Republicans do, because they'll just lie to you. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, it's actually more complicated than that. And that's not a good messaging, but it is true. And I don't know the right answer, but we have to stop fucking this up. You have some of the brightest minds in the country in our party. Can we please figure out the fuck we're doing?
It's tough. And like we keep complaining about, Bernie is not really helping.
No.
He's throwing a monkey wrench in.
You have to stop letting him, but...
You know, I think he's got... Look, I don't disagree that we have got to improve our messaging in terms of the fact that we care about common people, and maybe the party as a whole shouldn't be as in bed with Wall Street as we have been in the past.
Ugh.
But...
Since when are we more in bed with Wall Street than the Republicans? Since when did that become a fact? Since when did we start saying that? Bernie, that's not fucking true at all. That is not true. We are not more in bed with Wall Street than the Republican Party.
No, of course.
We're not.
Of course not.
But somehow, what you just said is become part of the public consciousness
yeah.
because of fucking Bernie Sanders.
Partially, yes.
He is hurting our party.
And then Elizabeth Warren stepped in this week because Obama gave a speech and got paid nicely for it.
Yep.
And then everybody kind of lost their mind and said, why is Obama talking to Wall Street?
It's like, Obama is not the president anymore. He's a private citizen.
He's not running for anything.
He's not running for anything. He never will again. Leave the goddamn man alone. And then they do this thing like, well, you know, our party really is in bed with Wall Street. Shut up. It's not true.
Yeah. And even Elizabeth Warren jumped on and said, well, I'm troubled by this. It's like, oh, you're going to perpetuate the stereotype.
Exactly.
Now?
Yes.
You are going to tie an anchor around your own neck.
Yep. And the party. I mean, that's so now we have to defend our ties to Wall Street. Even though, like, we've actually passed laws that regulate Wall Street, that regulate the mortgage industry.
Trump
we've passed all of these laws.
Fill this cabinet with Goldman Sachs people.
To regulate, to oversight, to do all this stuff to Wall Street. That's our party. The Democratic Party did that. And now we're stuck in an echo chamber with Bernie Sanders where we're too connected to Wall Street. It's so crazy.
And then Trump is actively trying to repeal Dodd-Frank.
Yes. The Democrats passed Dodd-Frank. That's our party that did that. And now we're like, oh, we are. No, no, that is not a message.
Yeah. What Elizabeth Warren should have said is, you know, this whole controversy about who Barack Obama is talking to is ridiculous. We passed the Dodd-Frank Act and Republicans and Trump are trying to take it away and the Consumer Protection Bureau.
Instead, here's what she said, do for consumers to protect you from Wall Street. And the Republicans are trying to take it away. I don't want to talk about Obama. He's a private citizen now. Period.
Yeah. Instead, she says, oh, well, I am troubled. It's like, dude,
you guys,
and we love Liz Warren.
Love
we defend her to end, but that was a horribly, horribly stupid thing to say and a ridiculous thing to say.
And now we're going
to
be...
And maybe she did follow that up with saying what I just said. She probably did, but all anybody is going to hear is, what she should have said is whoever the president as a private citizen wants to give a speech to is not important. What's important is what's happening right now.
That's right.
But
this important regulation that we passed to oversight and regulate Wall Street so that, you know, Main Street doesn't get fucked is being dismantled by the Republican Party who has all the power and you need to vote Democrat in 2018.
Yeah, this isn't hard.
There you go. Done.
Even very, 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 very smart people step in it sometimes. And I think I hope Elizabeth Warren knows she stepped in it. I hope. Unless now we're...
But Bernie on his Unity tour is talking shit about it.
Well,
he's the one who brought all this up.
But Bernie is the doddering old myopic man. Elizabeth Warren is supposedly our potential front runner for 2020.
Yep.
And now she wants to give herself a handicap and try to say me and my party need to become less tied to Wall Street.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
It's not true. And now it's a thing. So I don't, it's like...
I know. We can't get
like
out
we're
of
we're the smartest
way.
People and we're just fucking horrible
at politics.
It's just, it's,
We're good at governing. We suck at politics.
Yes. So frustrating.
Obama was good at it. Bill Clinton was good at it. Harry Reid was good at it.
It's just maddening.
Schumer is usually okay at it. Pelosi's pretty good at it. Like all the old time people that, you know, our super progressive friends want nothing to do with. Like, yeah.
I don't think Pelosi's particularly good at it. I mean, she's good at governing, but when I hear her on the, I don't know.
It's hit or miss.
Yeah, she's, I don't know. But anyway, that's not the point.
She's better than some people.
Yeah, so that's my rant about the Democratic Party for the day.
I'm
super frustrated.
Well, it's frustrating because we've got all this energy. We've got a wildly unpopular Republican president. We have a wildly unpopular Republican Congress. It's teed up to just kill it in 2018. But I'm terrified because we suck at turning out people for midterms.
Yep.
We suck at messaging. We've got all these advantages, and now we have this disjointed, self-defeating unity tour out there that's probably doing more harm than good.
Yep.
We got Elizabeth Warren putting an anchor around her and the party's neck for absolutely no reason other than to pander to some of the super crazy Bernie or bust people. Like, what are we doing, Rach?
I don't know.
What are we doing?
But we should talk about what you can do.
Yes.
Okay. So we gotta win in 2018. We have to. That's it.
We
just
have to make huge gains.
Huge gains.
Yes.
Okay. So people are starting to announce candidacies. Start paying attention to state politics and local politics, but start to pay attention to the House seats that are coming up. Because remember, every 2 years, every single member of the House is up for re-election. So, yes, we're gerrymandered, and yes, we it's challenging. But start to pay attention to who's going to run, if people are going to get primaried, if people are going to, like, for example, Ed Perlmutter, who's currently a congressman in Colorado, is going to run for governor of Colorado. So that seat is now going to come open to somebody completely different, new. So there's going to be a primary for that seat.
Right.
There's so far two people that have announced. A third person's going to announce in a couple weeks. And what I can do is I can pick the person that I think most closely resembles and shares my progressive values. And I can do that by talking to these people. Right. Everybody, these candidates want to talk to their voters, right? They yes. want to know what matters to you.
Yeah.
Reach out, talk to them, pick a person and start campaigning. Start helping them knock doors. Start helping them make phone calls. Start helping them raise money. Pick the person that is the most progressive, that most closely aligns with your values, and support them and help them win. And then if they don't win, support whoever wins in the exact same way. And yeah, it's boring, it's tedious work, but it is vitally important. And if you do that, and if enough people do that, we really do have a chance of taking back some semblance of power in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I wish our own party wasn't like dampening momentum.
Yeah.
But you can fight that.
Yes.
Like,
get out there, talk to your neighbors, talk to people in your community, talk to your friends, talk to your parents, talk to people, and tell them passionately why you love this person and what they're going to do, and connect those dots for people. What are they going to do for you?
If they can't do it themselves,
don't run against Trump.
No.
Tell them specifically why to vote Democrat.
Yes.
What is our party about? What can we do for you? Ask them at the door, what's happening in your life? What's something that's bothering you? What's something that, what do you want government to do?
And what is your candidate's
stance? And then figure
be concise
out.
And clear.
Yes. A specific thing that your candidate would support that would help them.
Like people
that,
respond to it.
It is amazingly effective.
Yes.
So that's what you can do. And they will love you forever for it because it's what works.
Don't run against Trump. Trump is running against himself.
Yep.
That part is covered.
Run
and
for.
If you cannot make a coherent argument as to what your candidate stands for, you're not going to connect with anybody.
Right. And they can help you. They can help you. The campaign staff will train you and give you talking points. If they're bad talking points, don't use them, by the way, because sometimes a lot of these candidates are going to run against Trump, and it's not a good idea, I don't think.
No.
So try to connect specific Democratic values that your candidate has that you share with what that will do for them.
And sometimes maybe you'll get that. Like, you knock doors, and maybe this person just wants to rail against Trump. And
great.
Then you could say, great, in opposition to Trump and his,
yes.
you know, refugee ban, my candidate stances this, this, and that.
Right.
So that opens the door.
And if you really want to stop Trump, here's another good talking point. If you really want to stop Trump, the best way for us to do that is to elect this candidate. And this is why.
Yeah.
Because if we elect this candidate, we have a chance of turning the House over, and then we can really obstruct him.
Yeah.
And whatever it is they hate about Trump, say we can stop him from doing that.
Right.
If we elect Democrats to the House, or if we elect Democrats to the Senate, this specific candidate is against Trump and will obstruct him, if that's what they want to talk about. If not, if they don't bring up Trump, you don't bring up Trump.
Yep. So that is the good news in opposition to sort of the frustrating bad news about the state of our party right now. The good news is there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of momentum and there's a lot of people willing to be involved. It's about coherent messaging. And if our party can't do it on a macro level, then we have to do it on a micro level.
Yes. That's the thing that we can do.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that's about going to wrap it up for us. We'll be back, obviously, next week. Please talk to us on Twitter at Irreverent Duo. The Cory Gardner stickers still need to go out to some of our donors. They will. I'm sorry about the delay on that. irreverenttestimony@gmail.com for your hate mail. If you'd like to send us some money, it is patreon.com/irreverenttestimony. Anything else, Rach?
I don't think so.
Well, thanks, guys. We will talk to you next week. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. And until next time, bye-bye.